Thank you very much. We're going to start with our reading this morning from John. Actually, it's from Luke, but John's going to deliver it.
On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself. So he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he travelled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring oil on and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave him to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.' Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told them, "Go and do likewise." Amen.
Cool. Thank you, John. As Jason mentioned, we're in the middle of a 3-part sermon series. I'm doing the middle one. Morning. And Lorna, you have the benefit of next week is delivering the final one. She'll be better than me, just in case you're wondering. Jason started last week talking about the Great Commandment, and he showed us a nice little slide which showed the journey we take from stranger to acquaintance to relationship. When we're first getting to know our neighbours, the bit that we looked at last week was about, honestly, just getting to know their names. You can't love your neighbour until you actually know their names. And so this week we're just going to start progressing a little bit through this. Hopefully, what are the barriers, what's one of the major barriers we're looking at this morning, to get firstly to acquaintance and then to relationship. The two things we're going to look at together as we break through this barrier are really simple, but the challenge for us will be to make the changes in our lives necessary to actually love our neighbours. So this morning our question is, if we're going to take the Great Commandment seriously, how are we going to create the space in our lives to build friendships with those who live near us? Before we dive into that, it might be useful for me to tell a little bit of our story. Some of you know it, some of you don't. For those of you who do, my many and profuse apologies for hearing it again. As Jason said, we moved to Epsom 2.5 years ago. I didn't start the timer. Rubbish. We felt like the Lord strongly told us to move to Epsom. Quite a strange thing, I know, but we moved. When we got there, we felt like the Lord said, "You need to get to know your neighbours," which on the face of it, you go, that's a piece of cake, go and say hello, all very good, but it doesn't always work. It's not always quite as easy as that. At our old house, we weren't necessarily very good neighbours, so we started to think about what are the things we can do to really get to know our neighbours. The first thing we did, Lorna and Callum made cakes for them all. We live on a little cul-de-sac, so there's another 11 houses there. We took them round within the first couple of weeks and said, "Hello, we're your new neighbours," which was lovely. We got some very different responses. One of our neighbours said, "Brilliant, do you want a coffee?" And we both looked at each other and went, "Yes, I suppose so." We'd prepared our hearts ready to give a cake away, but we weren't necessarily We hadn't got to the point of, we can get to receive from this too. We went to another neighbor, walked down their driveway as they were coming in with a cake in our hand. She said, "You're at the wrong house." I said, "Do you live here?" She said, "Yes." "Then we're at the right house. We are new neighbors." Another neighbor we took it round to and said, "It's cake for you." He said, "Oh, we were thinking, should we do that for you?" Then we thought, "No, only weird people do that, or Americans." So we had to start somewhere. After that, we invited a few of them around for dinner. Some of that worked, some of that didn't. I told the story a couple of months ago. We invited our next door neighbour around to dinner. "You come around on Saturday night?" And they said, "No." "How about the next Saturday?" "No." "How about any other time that would work for you?" "No." And then they moved within about 3 months of us getting there. They emigrated, in fact, to Australia. Some you win, some you lose. By about 6 months in, we'd managed to get maybe two of our neighbours around for dinner, and we're a little bit despondent by that point. We're going, we're not doing this getting to know our neighbours thing very well. And one of our other next door neighbour, mentioned to Lorna that Halloween, which was coming up, was really big in Livingston Park, where our little estate, Ex Asylum. Beautiful. And we're like, okay, how do we process that? Because the standard Christian response seems to be either you dress your kids up and send them out to ask sweets from strangers, which is the thing that you don't let them do for the rest of the year, or you shut the curtains, turn the lights off, sit in the back room and pretend you're not in. That seems to be the standard two Christian responses to Halloween, as we could see it. And then as Lorna was praying about this, because she's a good wife, she's like, well, maybe we could do something different. Maybe there's something more to this if we actually engage with our neighbours. Our epiphany at that point was we've been trying to get to know our neighbours, trying to go out to see them, and this was going to be the first time they were going to come to us. So we're like, brilliant, all right, what can we do? So we invited a couple of friends to come and join us, and we got the fire pit out, and the kids toasted marshmallows. Laura and Callum made some more cakes again. The cakes keep coming through our story. Lovely little cupcakes, beautifully decorated in Halloween colours, nicely wrapped so we could give something nice away to bless our neighbours with. So we also had some mulled wine for the adults because we didn't want them stealing all the cakes. And actually, Laura made a lovely pumpkin cake with the extra bits of pumpkin that we'd scraped out, which was fantastic. So we had 140-ish kids come through that day. There's a lot of kids where we are, and honestly, some of the first really good conversations were with the parents who stopped because I gave them a glass of mulled wine and they would chat, and it was brilliant. Because that had been such a good success, we're like, right, what's next? Okay, Christmas is coming up next. So we thought, okay, maybe we'll do it. We've got a nice little green area outside the front of our house. There's three trees that are that can't be knocked down, so the green got left. They didn't build houses on it. Brilliant. So we thought we could have a little, I don't know, some more mulled wine, some more mince pies maybe, and have some Christmas songs or something. So we pulled our best thoughts together, got the fire pit out again, practiced some songs on the guitar, and there was about... We got some ringers in from church. We got some people who could sing the tenor lines to the Christmas carols, and some descant lines, and some people that could serve mulled wine. And it was lovely. We were at the start of the afternoon. We were going, right, if two or three families turn up, we'll probably be all right. And there was, I think, about 65 of our neighbours came with us and sung. We started with "We Wish You a Merry Christmas." I thought, you know, we'll start at a low bar here. And I think we ended up with "O Come Let Us Adore Him, Christ the Lord," which was beautiful because my Hindu neighbours were just over there singing "O Come Let Us Adore Him, Christ the Lord," which I found beautifully ironic. So since then, we've organised men's curry nights like you guys do here. Michael runs the men's curry nights here. I invite our neighbours and we go out to the curry house, and actually it's a short cab ride back, so I just book the cabs in it. It works brilliantly. It's a great social interaction, particularly for blokes. Blokes don't talk. Just in case, ladies, you're sat here going, oh, you know, all the blokes have really good relationships. We just don't talk, unless you take us out for a curry, and then it seems to work. The last big thing we did was a nice barbecue. One of our neighbours said, have you heard of the Great Get-Together? We need to organise this. As we dug into it a little bit more, we realised what she meant was, you need to organise this, because you're the guys that organise things. So we did. And there was, again, well over 100 of our neighbours. This is it, outside our house. That's my house on the left. Came and we just had a nice barbecue. After church, put the barbies on, so we started about just after 1 o'clock. Honestly, it was lovely. So about 7 o'clock, I was telling this story to the small group leaders, about 7 o'clock in the evening, when there's only like 15 of us left or something, and people had had a few glasses of Pimm's and things, because we're very middle class in Epsom. One of my neighbours was just had a few weeks off moving to Rio de Janeiro with a work role. So we were sat chatting and said, in a few weeks' time, you'll be able to do this, but on Copacabana Beach. And he said, yeah, but it doesn't get any better than this. And I was like, I can feel it now. It was at that moment I realised that I changed. I'd changed from just wanting to get to know my neighbours to actually loving them. I miss them. I miss the fact that they've moved. Sorry. Shouldn't be that emotional, should it? So a small encouragement from this talk, and actually from this series, might be, if you're at the start of this journey, you might be looking at it going, okay, a barbecue for 100 people or a Christmas songs for it's a big thing. But we had to start somewhere, and it's taken us like 2.5 years to get to this point with our new neighbours. There's a great quote. Within small groups, we're doing some of this same material. It weaves in nicely. There's a great quote from the week one video in which they talk about being good neighbouring is about being mildly uncomfortable on numerous occasions. And I just love that, because Lorna will talk about it more next week, but sometimes it's just that first, you know, would you like a cake? Would you like to come to this? Can be mildly uncomfortable. But it was well worth it once we got to this stage. So this morning we're going to look at the time barrier. The healthiest person who ever lived was Jesus. He got a lot done, but when we read about his life, the word hurried never comes to mind. So let's go back to the reading we had from Luke's Gospel this morning. Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan, and he tells us this so that we can learn to be good neighbors. So as we look at this story, the 2 points I'm going to bring out this morning was that the Good Samaritan had his eyes open to see how to be a good neighbor. Other people had walked past the guy on the side of the road who'd been beaten, but the Good Samaritan saw him. He was also willing to adjust his diary, adjust his day around the poor chap who needed his help. And so for me, those are two of the key factors that we will all have to do if we're going to become great neighbors. When we previewed this with the staff team and the cluster leaders, so the standard, so they came out in different guises, but some of the standard questions based around that were these. First one, I've got so many friends, why would I try to make time for some more? So this would relate to the eyes open element of the Good Samaritan. Sometimes we don't see our neighbours because we're blinded by other friendships. Does that make sense? Or sometimes we're blinded by who we think our neighbours are. I couldn't be friends with them because they're like, you know, they're the ones with the horrible dog or the horrible kids or whatever it is. So that question will come up in a few guys, I'm sure, in your small groups or even as you're processing it yourselves. The next big question that came up, again in various guises, when my neighbours are available to chat, why is it that I always seem to be busy or always late to get to the next thing? And some of that, as we were chatting, the next thing was like church. How ironic. We can't be good neighbours because we're late for church and we're shouting at the kids and getting them in the car. I never shout to our kids. They were good this morning. They prayed for you all, by the way. So I shan't tell that story. So what we learn here, that what Jesus is challenging us in this story is to be good neighbours, we've got to be available. We've got to have time or flexibility or sometimes just to change what we're doing. as we were chatting through these questions, I found myself thinking about one particular neighbour who we'd kind of walked some of this journey with. When we moved to Livingston Park, Claire Hardy gave us the lowdown. She used to teach all the kids that are a bit younger than ours. She taught them all in reception. So she's like a hero in our estate. It's Mrs. Hardy, Mrs. Hardy. Claire was brilliant at showing us, at telling us who the best connected people were on our estate. So in our heads then, we're going, right, we've got to get to know our neighbours. We've got to know four people who are really well connected, and then we'll know everyone. Didn't work like that. We were completely wrong. The base issue is that the well-connected people are already busy, are already got loads of friendships. And so what that taught us next was a really valuable lesson. We found out that the neighbours who don't fit into those friendship groups were some of the ones that we've really got to know because they really want to get to know us. The people I thought I needed to know weren't the people that Jesus really wanted me to know. So one day I get back from work. I'd normally put the kettle on as you do, sit down, shout at the kids, all the usual things. And my neighbour was playing out with his son on the green outside. And I thought, right, I'm not going to put the kettle on just yet. I'm just going to take the opportunity, go and have a chat to him. We had a lovely chat. We talked about his work, his son, and a whole lot more before I just left him off to go on his merry day. From that first chat, our friendship has grown and grown. From that first chat on the green, we were able to invite them around for dinner. Soon after that, we became Strava buddies. For those of you, it's like social media for cyclists. It's a man thing again. I say it's a man thing. Yeah, most of my friends on Strava are men, apart from my wife, of course. When we put some of the events of the pictures up on the green, our neighbour is the one who always comes to help set up. He gets it. He's like, right, you know, what do you need? Shall I hold the ladder to put the bunty up? He's brilliant. I realised we built a good friendship once the dinner invite was reciprocated, which I promise you was one of the most lovely evenings we've had with any of our neighbours. But if I hadn't have had that first moment, that first time of going, I won't put the kettle on, I'll go and just have a quick chat, we might never have got to the point where we got to now. So how does that relate to the story of the Good Samaritan you're going? It's a bit random. My neighbour wasn't beaten at the side of the road, but the story of the Good Samaritan is about seeing the opportunities with those around you and allowing your diary to be changed in that moment. If I was to sum it up in one word, the story of the Good Samaritan as we're reading it here with the eyes of being a good neighbour, it would be this: intentionality. The Good Samaritan intentionally saw his neighbour and he intentionally changed his plans that day, which was exactly what I needed to do with my neighbour outside. When we read this passage, thinking about our real, literal, next-door neighbours, the only person the Good Samaritan had to be a neighbour to that day was the one person that the Lord brought across his path. We don't necessarily have to be good neighbours to everyone, but the one person that you see, respond to. So let's be intentional with our time so we don't miss the opportunities that both the priest and the Levite missed. Mark, can you get me a glass of water? My tea's out. On your chairs this morning, there was a block map, a nice little yellow printer. Sorry about the spelling. I nicked it from an American, as you can see. Would you like to grab your copy, and I'll run you through how it works. So the slide I showed earlier, with a stranger to acquaintance to relationship, the block map fits in here between stranger and acquaintance. The block map helps us to process from that I know their name to actually, thank you, buddy, so kind, to actually get to knowing them. It's a great tool. In fact, it's such a good tool. We're going to use it week by week in our small groups. And if you start using it, it will help you care about your neighbours that you didn't even realise you wanted to care about. Does that make sense? It will help you care about the neighbours that you didn't even realise you wanted to care about. Okay. This is your house in the middle. These 8 houses around it are your nearest neighbours, the ones you are most likely to see. It might not be, so we've got some physical neighbours over the back. We never see them because they're on essentially a different road. But the nearest neighbours that you see all the time. So I want you to write 3 pieces of information next to each of these. Each block, each square is a house. So within that house, you can write their number if you want. But if you can write any names you know, so if you know both their names, write both their names. If you know all family, please write all family. So that's the first piece of information I want you to write. The second piece of information I want you to write is a piece of information that you know about them that you didn't know, that you knew because you talked to them. So you can't write, they've got a red car, because anyone can see they've got a red car. But you could write, they're a teacher. They're a fireman. Their kids go to this such and such a school. So that would be the second piece of information. And then the third piece of information gets a little trickier. The third piece of information, I want you to write something that you know about them because you've basically got a deep relationship with them. So it would be life goals. It would be if they've, you know, if they've got a family member who's going through cancer, for example, or some other major illness. Or something that really it took more than just a polite hello in the street to put down. So 3 things. We're all going to do this together. I'm just going to give you a few minutes to do it. Is that all right? Any quick questions? So just write in really simple terms, 1 word sometimes, name, piece of information you know from chatting to them, and life goal or something a bit deeper. Is that all right? You may not be able to fit all of these in. The point of this isn't that you fill all of these in. But I'll come back to that in a minute. So I'm just going to give you a little time, and I'm going to do it with you. Jason did some of the stats last week. If 100 people did this, only 1 would be able to fill all of those in. We can't. Of most of you in the room, there's probably only 10% of you that will be able to fill in just the names, for example. So the point of the exercise, I was chatting to this with somebody earlier, the point of the exercise isn't to make you feel guilty about how little you know about your neighbours, but some of the joy of this exercise is actually that the Lord uses it to convict us a little bit in terms of how we can process this a little bit more. If I can ask you to take these away with you, my challenge set for you this week, before we see you again next Sunday, could you fill 1 more piece of information in? So being a good neighbour this week might be as simple as finding out 1 more name, or for the person you don't know what their job is, just, hi, nice to see you again. I've never even asked, what is your job? Because you never know when those conversations lead to the next conversation, lead to a dinner invite. Cool. Stephen Tarner, can I borrow you for 2 minutes? Stephen Tarner are my heroes. Do I need to do anything with the other mic? Cool. When we started talking about this just casually one evening with these guys, they're brilliant at this. Tana, very quickly, you've got a little story from this week about your neighbours. Do you mind sharing it with us?
Hi. Following Jason's talk last Sunday about God placing us in specific neighbourhoods for specific reasons, Steve and I went home and we were out the front of our block of flats where we live, and we were getting my car ready to give away. And during the time that we were doing this, about 5 sets of our neighbours came down and asked about what we were doing, and they were amazed that we were giving this car away. Then suddenly a runaway car from about 500 metres up the road hurtled down our road backwards, navigating bollards, bends in the road, and a mini roundabout. And it finally came to rest in the bonnet of the car opposite. So it totally smashed up and wrote off this car opposite. So the family opposite, who we've never met before, rushed out to see this car kind of just having demolished their lovely brand new car. And so in their distress and their anger, we were able to go over and talk to them and offer them some reassurance and support. And so we're looking forward to kind of seeing them again. We're looking out for them so that we can have another chat and kind of build on what we'd started there last week. So I was reflecting afterwards that this is a good example of how God has put us where we live for a specific reason, but also at a very specific time.
Cool. Thank you, Tara. You don't have to go through to such extreme measures, by the way. A cake will suffice. Smashing your neighbour's car up isn't necessarily the standard protocol we want to follow. Steve, thank you. And honestly, if you have any questions, talk to these guys. They do it so well. If you're stuck, you're going, what do I do next? They probably know the answer because they've done it. They're brilliant. And that was one of about 18 stories we could have shared. Steve, with the block map, I had a very specific question, didn't I? What difference did it make filling in the block map for you?
Well, first of all, we're not brilliant at it because I've got one block. I've got one block, one house on there that we don't know. He just won't engage with us.
Stephen Tarnas' flat looks like this because they've got nine flats in their block.
I've just filled it out five times, actually, now. And every time I fill it out, I see something new that God's trying to reveal. But last week in small group, we did it as a group. And it was really great. It prompted lots and lots of stories about our neighbours. And then I asked them about, well, let's just look at it in terms of who's the stranger, who's the acquaintance, and who's we've got a relationship with. And that was a real challenge to us. And realising that actually the art of neighbour it's not just a six-week course. It's a life-changing thing that takes years and years and years. We thought, well, the first thing we could do, at small group, we said that take it home and just pray over the map and see what God reveals. So I've got my the one I've just filled out, and I'm going to show you what it's like. This is the one I've just filled out here, right? And I'll take it through, and you can see the guy that is impossible to get near to, but we will, you know. I think every time he sees us now, he does a runner, but we'll catch up with him.
Has he got a car you could smash? Thank you. Thank you, Stephen Tarnas. That's brilliant. What I liked about Stephen Tarnas' story, they are brilliant at it, but when I did it with them the first time, they were like, oh, yeah, these guys moved in relatively recently. I hadn't even thought about going to ask them their names. But, which was lovely. Sorry, Bob. Am I getting a bit dull? I probably am over time. Right, let's keep going. As we go through the Art of Neighbouring series together, I'm just going to remind you of some of the questions that will come up. Question one, I've not got time for this. So as we were praying at the Dolphin, whenever it was, a week and a half ago, the person I was praying with literally prayed this prayer. Lord, please help me to make the time to be a better neighbour. Because time is my biggest obstacle in allowing me to love my neighbours. And I was like, that's a brilliant prayer. In fact, it's one I've prayed as well. Second big question, but I already have enough friends. And I know this is a hard one for me, because we've got so many wonderful friends. Sometimes the sacrifice of inviting a neighbour for the rugby or to watch the football or for a meal, instead of watching some of your friends, often from here, it's a good sacrifice and it's a good discipline for us to learn. Sometimes a spot of FOMO, as in not spending time with the people that you know well, is a good thing for the soul. As I mentioned earlier, when we went through these questions previously with the staff team and the small group leaders, all these questions from some of the nicest people in our church, some of the best leaders in our church, came up. You are not on your own if you're having these questions. In fact, as we go through this in small groups, these are some of the questions that we will wrestle with together. This series, as I mentioned, isn't meant to guilt you into being a good neighbour. If you're going through the block map and you're going, I've got this missing, or even I've got one piece of information, what do I do next? It may be the Lord is using that in your heart, and maybe the Lord is starting to flash people up. Oh, perhaps you could go and see them. Perhaps you could go and find out what their name is. Perhaps you could invite them round for dinner. When the Lord started talking to us about getting to know our neighbours, we felt very convicted. And as we looked at the friendships and realised most of them, which were, looked at our friendships and realised most of them was from church. As I mentioned earlier, pushing through that mild discomfort in getting to know our neighbours has brought us many blessings. Can I invite the band back up? For us, the reasons why we weren't good neighbours were twofold. Firstly, we needed to make time in our lives to get to know our neighbours. And secondly, when we did have an evening, we didn't go and spend it with our neighbours. We spent it with our already friends. So for those of you who the Lord is nudging, try and lean into that a little bit more. Try and listen to what the Lord is saying. Looking back for us, this is what the Lord did for us. The cakes, or a little chat outside our house, led to the meals. The meals gave us enough favour with our neighbours that they were ready to come round at Halloween and have a proper conversation. The favour that Halloween brought us meant that when we invited them to sing Christmas songs with us, they basically felt safe enough to turn up. The favour that this brought us in the first year meant that by the second year, they invited their friends and their neighbours and their family sometimes, because they doubly trusted us, if you like. And all these little steps led to the conversation that I had with my neighbour at the barbecue when I realised I'd moved from just wanting to get to know them to actually loving some of them. That was our journey. I know yours will look different, but please be encouraged that it's not only possible, but that it will bring many blessings to your lives. If you're able to, should we stand together?